Welcome to Jaws of Justice Radio on 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio. It's Monday morning. My name is Jeff. In mid-May, some of the prisoners at Crossroads Correctional Center in Cameron, Missouri, refused to leave the chow hall after the evening meal. A few prisoners broke out windows and gained access to the warehouse that held food and canteen items, offices, and production facilities for the prison industries, doing a great deal of damage. That is the version we got from the Department of Corrections last week. Today, we will open the phone lines so our listeners can give information from their loved ones at Crossroads and their concerns that they want the DOC to address. Host Latara Smith of the KC Freedom Project and Kay Johnson of Transitions to Freedom Campaign will talk about the meeting they had with the DOC staff, the issues they discussed, and they will also take your phone calls about the lockdown at Crossroads. Stay tuned for our calendar of events in the middle of the broadcast and the 420 drug war news at the end of the broadcast. Coming up is Latara and Kay.
Thank you for joining us today. I'm Latara Smith, your host this morning. I have the privilege and the honor of doing this show with, we have State Representative Brandon Ellington here today. Brandon, thank you for coming today. Okay, and then we have Mrs. Kay Johnson from Transitions to Freedom campaign in with us today. Today we're going to be recapping and going over some of these issues that are revolving around the Missouri Department of Corrections, this lockdown situation at Crossroads Correctional Facility, as well as we've had some issues at other prisons as well. We had some issues at the prison down in Tipton, okay? But for those of you that are kind of new to the situation and maybe didn't listen in a couple of weeks ago, myself and State Representative Brandon Ellington and a couple of other individuals actually went into Crossroads Correctional Facility, and we met with some of the administrative staff there. We met with Warden Rhonda Pash, Assistant Warden Mr. Schreeder, Mrs. Ann Boyles, which is the Director over Adult Institutions with the Missouri Department of Corrections. She was there, and we actually sat down with those individuals as well as an inmate counsel there at the facility to go over our concerns, to listen to the inmates' concerns and let them voice their opinions, as well as we were there as advocates to address some issues as well. So, Brandon, would you like to start off this morning and kind of inform the people of exactly, you know, what happened at the town hall meeting?
Well, the town hall meeting, you had several residents of the DOC that was there. I believe they was pretty much handpicked. I requested Mr. Ricky Kidd come up, who I believe is actually innocent and somebody I'm working with in the facility. But it was a basic overview over what happened, which was information I already know. So I really wasn't impressed by the town hall meeting. And I also have plans to go back out there. So it was a basic meeting with DOC, the director, like you said, the warden, telling us what I already know.
Okay. So when you say you weren't thrilled with it, can you go into detail?
Well, they was telling us about how the facility was ramshack, pretty much.
Right.
But you're telling me something after the fact, because I know that that a lot of the areas was already repaired. So I don't need you to show me that the sink was leaking last week when I already know it's repaired. I don't even need to talk to you about that, because the sink is no longer leaking.
Right.
So it was a lot of pictures about the facility, how the inmates had ran through the facility when they was riding, and how they destroyed the canteen, how did it destroy the cafeteria area, how did it destroy the personal property area, and how they had various pieces of personal information scattered around, and also the room where they make the toilet paper at was right. Pretty much the areas that they were showing us in the pictures.
Right, which is the same pictures, would you agree, Ms. Johnson, that they showed us when we went down and met with DOC and Jeff City a week prior?
Yes,
when they showed us the PowerPoint. Mm-hmm. Brandon, those were the exact same pictures that they showed us. Y'all didn't see just a couple of them that where they went into detail talking about the several letters that they were receiving coming out to them with threats and things like that.
Well, no, I got a packet of the letters, so I seen that too.
Oh, okay. They did release those to you? Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, they didn't show it on the – that was the only difference in what they presented to us at the meeting when we went down to DOC. I have to agree with you, Mr. Ellington. I have some concerns as well because I felt that the inmate panel that came there that particular day was handpicked. I don't believe that it, you know, represented – do you understand what I'm saying? I just feel like I think the majority of them were also out of the honor dorm as well.
No, they were. That's why I requested Ricky was brought up. I requested Ricky before I came out there because I know who I want to talk to in facilities and who I don't want to talk to in facilities. Not knocking the folks that are in front of me, but I know personally who I work with.
Right, right. And I agree with you there. And that's some concerns and some questions. And I've gotten a lot of complaints in the mail, a lot of response in the mail since we actually were there. And I believe they probably, some of the people wrote you as well.
I got several letters.
Several, yeah.
Probably too many.
Because they were like, I wrote Representative Ellington too, Ms. Smith. And I'm like, yes, okay. Because
yeah,
I can't imagine.
I can't read all them letters, man. I went to my satellite office the other day, and I probably had about 20-something letters. That was, I don't know, they was just mail because they was all together.
They were all
so
together.
So they wasn't like mailed Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. They whatever day they mailed them, they all mailed them
right
at the exact same
well,
time.
Well, when you open them to your assistant, they're going to say, you know, a lot of them, which is a concern for me because, you know, I kind of knew there was going to be some situations when we did that advocacy, inmate advocacy questionnaire. And the way that they were going to do that process, okay? It's very hard to have seven inmates present this information or ask these questions and get an honest opinion, you know what I'm saying, from everyone. So originally we had requested a town hall meeting where we actually went into the facility per each unit and talk with the inmates to let them know, you know, here's some paperwork for you. This is what we're here to help you with. What are y'all complaints and concerns? I'm assuming that DOC wanted to kind of do it a different way, and that was the way they set it up. And, you know, you give a person a chance to see if their way is going to work. But we can clearly see that did not work. So when you say you guys, are you going to go back in and maybe try to have a town hall with the inmates?
Well, no, per statute, I can go to the facility whenever I want to, and I can walk through with a chaperone unrestricted.
Okay.
So yeah, I am going back up there. I'm gonna be contacting most of the folks that written me letters.
Okay, good.
Because by statute, they can't block me from doing whatever I want to do. And then on the follow up, I've actually started working with various reps when it comes to the appropriation process. Because for the past 6 years, I sat on the appropriations for crime prevention and corrections. So that's all the correctional institutions, all the probation and parole facilities, the highway patrol, the drug task force, and all this good stuff. So I'm looking at it from multiple layers.
Okay.
So we will be going back up there. It won't be until after August the 7th. I haven't finalized the date yet.
Right.
But by statute, I can drive up there whenever I want to and go in any cell block that I want to. I've done it. And another facility, we've actually, me and Representative Gail McCain-Beatty, we actually shut down the facility off of Front Street for various issues, and we did the same thing. We went up there, used the statue, came in the facility, and then started addressing some of the issues that we had.
Okay, because that is one of the concerns, that's one of the complaints that came out, is that the repairs were already made.
Yeah.
Okay, that did come back, you know. And then I think you and I discussed that we thought maybe that was the situation. Okay, what do you have? And we'll come back to that, Brandon. But Kay, what do you think about everything that's going on? Because you were there at the meeting in Jeff City, but you weren't able to go to the meeting, and that was at the town hall meeting at the prison for whatever reason. Because, you know, when we went into Jeff City, Brandon, it was myself, it was Ms. Johnson, it was Saj Kayan, it was Jeff. And when it was time to do the town hall, they didn't want other people to come in.
So they only let you and Jeff come in?
Well, originally it was just me. Originally it was just me. That was the request. And I asked, I said, well, you know, can Jeff come in? I think we need to have a male come in because, you know, men, inmates talking to males, I think that would be good. So I do want to make that known. But Ms. Johnson, tell me what from the meeting to everything you know as transparency is now, what do you see?
Based upon the meeting that we went to in Jefferson City, I felt like it was a lot of they did this, they did that, they mm-hmm. did this, they did that. And my take on it was people don't just wake up and tear up a facility for no reason.
Right.
What led up to this? Because they were obviously upset about something. And, you know, it seems to be based upon more of what they've suffered as far as costs with the destruction of the property. And it seems like that's what, to me, that's what they want to keep the focus on. They tore up our facility. But I need to know, like, what are we going to do to prevent this in the future? That's what's important to me. Like, what kind of programs or what are the consequences for the COs who inflict these type of situations upon the inmate that make them want to destroy a prison facility?
Right.
And so that's what I got on it. It was more of a, so they did this and it was for a lack of communication, but it seems to have been a lack of communication for a long while if it led up to that.
It was. And that's what I've always said, because it is two sides to this. You mm-hmm. have issues with, and then Brandon, I'll come back and ask you about that. You have issues with, you know, the pay and the COs and understaffing, because the facility is down, I think, about 70 guards is what we were told, mm-hmm. 70 correctional mm-hmm. officers, okay? So it's some issues over there, but it's also some issues with the inmates.
Exactly.
And when I say, you know, all this started, in my opinion, due to lack of communication, it's because the inmates' voices were not being heard when they were complaining about deals and things and such. It was not getting heard, you know, and that, when when you are not able to voice your opinion, when you are not able to file a complaint and know that complaint is getting where it's supposed to go, because that was a major complaint too, Mr. Ellington, that the grievance process is not fair. Mm-hmm. It's not just, that it's very biased, and that, you know, they feel like, okay, where do we have to go? What do we have? What can we, I mean, we're not being heard. And that started a lot of it, I do believe, you know, the fact that, you know, their issues were not being addressed, you know, the lack of time going to recreation, the lack of time for programs, because from what the inmates were saying, they began to really lock them down because, I guess, the staffing not being able to move and things like that, and it just kind of became a pressure pot. We have a call on the line. Caller? Oh, I'm sorry. My mistake. I thought we had to call on the line. If anyone does want to call in, please feel free to do so. The number is 816-931-5534. Mr. Ellington, what is your take on how all this, you think, came about? What do you think happened?
A couple things. One, I want to address what she said in the meeting in Jeff City, and it's something similar to what I said in the meeting at Crossroads to the warden. So what I'm seeing is a lot of punitive actions, and I've actually stated that in there because one of the concerns was the inmates that was writing letters or sending threats anonymously about what they was going to do when they get out. And what I stated was if I was in lockdown and I wasn't committing any violations, but I was subject to get penalized for somebody else's violations, then the incentive for me to actually be good is not there, because I'm already locked down. I'm already frustrated. I'm already angry. So I do agree with you 100% that I think a lot of the stuff that we're seeing is punitive from the time frame of the lockdown, because Saturday was their 70th day of being on lockdown, and then they said it was going to go into modified lockdown. But again, it is no reason if Facility A is operational for Facility A not to be utilized unless I want to use my authority. But then we have statutorial issues. Addressing the other concern about the lack of employees, well, this is twofold. And I'm going to give you a small example without going into details and being too long. This year, I took a little under $250,000 out of DOC and allocated it to Kansas City for programs that do recidivism work, et cetera. Now, what makes this important is that little under $250,000 was money that was sitting there.
Mm-hmm.
So when we look at the appropriations, the amount of contracts and the amount of dollars that's generated in DOC, it doesn't correspond with a logical lack of employees, going back to one of the inmates questions at the town hall. One of the inmates stated, he was in the honor wing,
right.
But one of the honor wing inmates stated, well, I see the same five COs that I seen prior to lockdown that I see while we're on lockdown, so why are we not moving?
Well, wait a minute. Let me tell you what he said. He didn't say just that. He said, I've seen my unit run with less. Normally, yeah, we run with three officers, and now we have five, but we're on lockdown. That's exactly what, you know, that gentleman said, and that was a good point, you know, when he said that, because it's like, for example, the situation with moving towards one meal now, one hot meal. Well, if the kitchen, and I have to agree with this, you know what I'm saying, if the kitchen is prepared to do with, if it's repaired enough to do one hot meal, why is it not repaired enough to do three? Mm-hmm. I posed the question when we were in Jeff City, if the unit, if the kitchen and all that particular building or whatever, have you seen that actual building, Brandon?
I haven't walked through that facility, but the pictures is all streamlined. But even that is nonsense, right? So again, we're talking about punitive damages that's separate from the policies of the institution. So I can care less about opinions of why we can't do anything. The policy states one thing, and by statutory language, you have to follow the policy. When we talk about corrections, we have various ideologies that's interwoven into correctional facilities. The average person that works at a correctional facility or that's non-engaged with those that are locked up in correctional facilities see it as a warehouse for penalties, right? You go here because you did something wrong, so you're subject to hard times because what actually happened. But the reality is that regardless of whatever crime that the individual committed or what have you, it's either a state, well, we're talking about state here, so it's a state violation, right? So inside that state violation, the institutions are regulated. So the state has regulations that has to be followed. So I don't care if I like inmate A, B, C, D, or whoever it is. It's a state facility that has state policies that correspond with that state statute that the individual broke. And we're watching DOC violate state policy.
Exactly. Well, see, when I asked you if you'd seen the building, actually what I was getting ready to say is, because I was trying to get the schematics of the building, because they
said it was the streamline right there. I know where it's at.
Okay, they said it was like the whole building, and three different sections of that building was destroyed, is what they told us.
What's the hallway that runs through all three sections?
Okay.
So it's streamlined. That's why I keep saying it's streamlined.
Okay.
So it's not like they went through the entire facility. And not trying to be facetious or funny, but when I was looking at some of the pictures, it was, yes, it was destruction, but I use a toilet paper room as an example. If it was total destruction, they would have set those bales of toilet paper on fire. So we had destruction, but it wasn't to the tune where the facility is non-operational.
Yes.
Well, see, my question, when I was getting to, and I was saying, have you seen the building, is, and I asked this to them as well, if that building was destroyed and not the actual units per se, why are they locked down on the units? Why can they just bring the sack lunches to the units? Do you understand what I'm saying? Why continue
regular movement?
Right, to where, because that was the only part of the prison that was destroyed,
right?
Supposedly. So why can't we? Why was the other movement restricted? Why was the movement in the honor dorms restricted?
Because it's penalties, and I keep saying that because one and one's always two. So if you look at the policy around murders in correctional institutions, they have a lockdown procedure. The same when you look at the policies around rioting, they have procedures. So when you talk about 70 plus days of lockdown, we're talking about punitive damages.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And do you think they know this? Do you think the DLC knows this and they just ignore it, or no one brings that to them?
I think it's a broken chain of conscious communication. So you have a whole bunch of parts moving. And typically, people that deal with corrections, they deal with it from one dimension without understanding the true intricacies. Example, I go to a hotel and I holler at the doorman for something that I want. In all actuality, I should have jumped the doorman and went to the owner of the hotel, right? Because he even supersedes the manager, because the manager just follows what the doorman says to do. So when we talk about corrections, I think typically we have a situation where people don't know what to do. Example, when you were talking about the inmates writing corresponding letters and they're being open. Yeah, that happens all the time. However, if they send it to the state, they can't open it.
Right.
Right. So it's all type of ways that they can get information out, but people need to know the proper channels, and that just comes from investigating. So when we talk about the correctional institutions, when I go to a penitentiary, the warden is ominous, right?
Okay.
Until I go past that warden, then the warden no longer matters. Because, see, DLC has a director that the warden is responsible for following up with. And the director is responsible for to the legislative body. So the director is not ominous either. They're responsible for following what we dictate in law and statute. So when we talk about crossroads, I believe crossroads allows to fester because there was no information.
Mm-hmm.
One of the representatives, even myself, I didn't know about the lockdown until somebody in Kansas City told me about it. And mm-hmm. that was towards the end of session. When I contacted one of the reps in St. Louis after the meeting that we had at Crossroads, he knew nothing about it. He was like, what are you talking about? So in saying that, now we actually got reps paying attention, reps asking questions, reps getting involved. And if we are honest about it, we see DOC making counter movements because they understand the trajectory. So what DOC is doing is they're bringing Republicans in to hold town hall meetings with the workers, which gives you one side, but it doesn't give you the totality of the story. But that goes into securing funding, because mm-hmm. once the entire body finds out, well, what's going to happen? Well, I'm already seeing in the future, you're going to have some of the Republicans that go down there. Oh, well, they did this to the facility, they did that to the facility, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, because this is the side of the story that they're getting,
mm-hmm.
Which is smart from the director's standpoint. The problem is that they actually got people that care that's getting involved.
Right.
So,
Exactly.
But I think that's why it's been allowed to fester and grow.
And it's been years. It's been years. It's not just. It's just.
Well, you
putting
the same complaint to the same person.
Exactly.
That's
exactly.
like you got a bad manager mm-hmm. again at the apartment hotel.
Exactly.
And you keep filing the complaint with that manager mm-hmm. at the apartment hotel. Yeah, you're gonna lose.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go over to the owner of the apartment, oh man, the manager's doing what?
Exactly.
And that's not what they're supposed to be doing.
So that leads me to this question: the current warden. Well.
And I don't know the warden, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
But the current warden at Crossroads, how long has she been there?
I couldn't
tell. Is she fairly new or? Okay. Well, I want to just announce the number to our listeners. If anyone has any questions, please feel free to call in. The number is 816-931-5534. We encourage you to call in. Don't wait to the end to call in. Call in now, because we want to hear your questions. While you have Representative Ellington here to answer your questions, please feel free to call in. Ms. Johnson, you and I have talked about several things. We touch base on the same thing that Brandon just touched base on in reference to bringing in the set of officials to meet with them for the town hall meeting. And we felt that maybe had opened the door, even though we asked them about a town hall meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Originally, it was going to the unit and talk with, the individuals or whatever. What is your take on the things that we asked them about when we went? Do you feel that they followed through and were, a person of their words, the people that we met with?
Well, my standpoint as being an advocate, for the inmates, it was basically everything was, we're willing to work with you. We're willing to work as a community. We want people to come in from the outside to be the voice for the inmates. It seemed as though that they were willing to do so, to make a change as far as the treatment of the inmates and trying to implement programs back into the facilities. And what I got from Ann Precise is that it is her mission and it is her goal to begin programs that rehabilitate inmates from the day that they come into the prison instead of waiting until the last 6 months. And then we also learned that, about the 6 month release for job searches and things of that nature. But it was basically it seemed like everything was a OK. Yes, 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 yes.
Mm-hmm.
That's, and as far as my program will go, where I would come in is the reentry program. And I haven't had a chance to call them on that yet. But, it just seemed as though that they wanted to change the issue, that mm-hmm. they wanted to be for the inmates rather than, ridicule them and make them look like the enemy.
Mm-hmm. Brandon, what do you have to say about that?
Don't know your program. But that's not how DLC works. Because DLC gets their funding from the legislative body. So DLC doesn't have operational funding to just spend on anything. They have to get approved by the legislative body. So when we do educational programs and when we do recidivism programs and when we do whatever we do, it comes out of the state budget. The state approves whatever they can and what they can't spend. The same when we're talking about the correctional facilities wanting to get to a position where they actually rehabilitate people as opposed to warehouse them. I don't put them in good faith, and I give you a piece of legislation to bring it to real world examples. So I have a bill that would certify and bind any inmate that's locked up in the state of Missouri. DOC religiously comes in committee to not testify in favor and not testify against, but to testify for informational purposes. Mm-hmm. So that means that they're not really in favor of the certification and binding bill, but it is no issue with the bill because it costs no funding from DOC. Mm-hmm. So they talk about the possibilities of it, but it's always anti, but they don't speak against it because it's something that's beneficial right. for the institution. So when we talk about DOC, I believe that people that actually care about corrections will spend their time more wisely lobbying a legislative body, and this is why. We have a committee on corrections. The committee on corrections are responsible for ultimately the regulation that happens inside of the correctional facilities. So if the correctional facilities were to be facilities that are supposed to rehabilitate people, and by definition, rehabilitation means to restore the useful nature, right? Then the statutes of the correctional facilities would mandate that that's what happens. That's not what the statute mandates. Mm-hmm. Statute right. mandates that folks are warehoused, and that's what you see. Like, corrections is not nothing new. If you if we study the history of jails, penitentiaries, colonization, marginalized communities, and everything, we see a smooth trajectory from incarceration to certain laws that violate First Amendment rights, political rights, etc., and we see certain communities that was targeted in different cities. Mm-hmm. Right now, none of this is opinionated. All of this is mm-hmm. empirical, documented mm-hmm. evidence. And it's the same when we talk about ultimately uncovering the veil of corrections for warehousing to transforming them into rehabilitation centers. So I think advocates would spend their time more wisely lobbying at the state level and lobbying at the federal level with their congressmen, their senators, and their House of Representatives and their state senators to actually change the statutes, which dictates what the facilities can do. Mm-hmm. Because a warden doesn't have authority like that.
Right.
And that's what I was getting at. That's why I really feel like it was a tell them what they want to hear. We agree
right.
to everything
yeah,
and
that.
Get them out of here. You know, that's what I felt like it was, you know, give them a good message to go back and tell the people, give us a little right. time to do what it is that we do and send them on their way. That's what I got from it. I didn't really feel like it was really for the benefit of the inmates. I felt like it was for the benefit of them to make them look better in the media, to make them look better to the families of the inmates. Mm-hmm. It was just I didn't get a genuineness from it.
Right. And then something else, because I know it's the issue of funding and things have to go through legislative. You have to have all these funds for DOC. But that's the one reason when I spoke to them about, you know, people in the community that have these programs that want to help. And, you know, we spoke about that when I worked with TDC or when I worked with the Oklahoma Department of Corrections. If we had programs come into the prison, the majority of the time, those were groups that were volunteering their times. Those were nonprofits that would come in.
I don't think funding is the issue. Mm-hmm, I think that's either. A misunderstanding. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give you a representative from a rural area that talked to me about the bill I was just talking about, the certification mm-hmm. and binding bill. He came to me, and before I say I wanted everybody to know, he wasn't trying to be racist. He wasn't trying to be funny.
Right.
He was being honest. He came to me, he was like, Ellington, you're not thinking. And everybody that know me know I have a quick response, sometimes good and bad. And I looked at him, I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, you're not thinking. You only think about how it's going to affect your people. You're not thinking about how it's going to affect me. And I looked at him like, come on, man, what you mean? Dude, in my area, I have 5 correctional facilities. Do you really think I can go home and tell people that I want to vote on the bill that's going to make them lose their job? You have to find another way to articulate it. And when he said it, it hit me. I was like, because he wasn't trying to be racist.
Right.
He wasn't trying to be funny. He was talking about investments. So when I talk about, I don't believe it's a lack of dollars. When you look at DOC, in food alone, since we were talking about the kitchen,
right?
In food alone, they have 5 contracts, right? Follow me on this. They have groceries, meat, condensed meat, canned goods, dry goods, and dairy.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, wouldn't that fall in the same thing, right? What is meat and condensed meat? What is dairy and milk? Why are they not in the same why are they not in the same boat? The same when you look at investments in equipment. I'm gonna use something that they touted. Well, we're gonna have these little kiosks where the inmates can order stuff at a commissary. Well, that's cool unless you're not trying to rehabilitate people. Because if you have the infrastructure to buy kiosks, then you also have the infrastructure to allow these kiosks to be educational institutions. But we don't want to do that. And we don't want to do that because we're talking about long-term gains. And this is where so-called minorities fall short with understanding the rules of engagement. And I say so-called minorities because in the state of Missouri, 70-plus percent of the population is so-called minorities for nonviolent drug offenses. Well, with these same so-called minorities, when they're warehoused in facilities outside of Kansas City and St. Louis, you have associated tax dollars with them. And none of this is opinionated. All of this is facts. With those associated tax dollars, you have no infrastructure, meaning I warehouse somebody for 5, 10, 15 years. I get that associated credit, and then I send them back to east side of Kansas City and St. Louis. When I send them back to these areas, they're both economically stressed.
Right.
I'm almost guaranteed to get them right back. So we have a depopulation of tax dollars by statute and by law going to other areas, because if I'm warehoused in, let's say, DeKalb County, where Crossroads is at, if I'm there when the census hit, it doesn't matter if I live in Kansas City. My tax dollars is going to Crossroads, DeKalb County. That population is not the same population as Kansas City, not the same density as the east side where I'm going back. And when I come back, I got a couple years, and I'm coming right back in there to help increase your tax dollars and deplete the city in which I live in. And all of this is structural, I believe.
Okay. Well, we're going to take a, go to our break real quick, and we'll be back.
Now, the calendar for the week of July 30th. The Kansas City chapter of Empower Missouri presents Better Know a Ballot Initiative, KC Forum, Friday, August 3rd, 11:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Plex Pod Westport Annex, 300 East 39th Street, KCMO. Bring a brown bag lunch and join Cecilia Bessler Patton from Jobs with Justice to discuss Prop A, and Sarah Owsley Townsend, KC Chapter Coordinator of Empower Missouri, on the Healthy Homes Initiative. Then join them in phone banking to help galvanize votes. The KC Area Chapter of Parents of Murdered Children and Other Survivors of Homicide will hold their monthly meeting Friday, August 3rd, beginning at 7:30 p.m. at Our Lady of Sorrows Church, 2552 Gillum Road, KCMO. POMC meets to provide support and assistance through an ongoing emotional support, education, prevention, advocacy, and awareness to all survivors of homicide victims. Veronica's Voice is teaming up with Mod Pizza in Olathe, Kansas, with 20% of all purchases going to benefit the recovery and economic independence of women who are rebuilding their lives coming out of the trauma of commercial sexual exploitation and addiction. You can help a good cause and eat pizza too on Tuesday, July 31st, 10:30 a.m. to 10:30 p.m. at Mod Pizza, 201-52 West 153rd Street, Olathe, Kansas. My name is Jeff, reminding you that these events and more can be found on the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page, as well as the Jaws of Justice Radio page on the KKFI website, kkfi.org. We want to thank our engineer today, Keith Washburn. Now, here is Latara and her guest.
Everyone, thank you for coming back into the show. We're on the second part of the show. And for those who are just tuning in, actually, we are, it's myself and State Representative Brandon Ellington, and we have Ms. Kay Johnson from Transitions to Freedom Campaign. And we are here discussing this situation with the Department of Corrections involving this current lockdown at the Crossroads Correctional Facility. I believe we have a caller online. Caller, are you there?
Yes.
Okay. Hi. What is it you have to say?
Well, I'd just like to say that I think what we saw in Cameron, Missouri, take place a few months ago, it's about to become an epidemic. And the only thing that really surprises me is that it hasn't happened long before now.
Right.
I'm a member of an organization. We monitor the treatment and the complaints that we receive from inmates in the Department of Corrections. And if we're going to prevent incidents like these, there are a lot of issues that need to be addressed. I think Brandon, he touched on one of them a few minutes ago when he was talking about the economic impact that prisons have on the communities.
Right.
Now, in this particular instance here in Cameron, that prison, the property that prison is built on was donated to the legislature so they could step past everybody else who was petitioning the government or to build that prison in their community.
Yep.
And they already had one prison there. So this, you know, these prisons, they feed a lot of hungry mouths. I've had a lot of legislators tell me this, that they can't go back to the community and advocate certain things because they won't be welcome in their community anymore, and then they won't get elected. We need to come up with an alternative that will provide people with an economic stability besides building prisons all the time, because this is
right.
This is the number one support system that they have in these communities.
Exactly, yeah. And I agree with you.
Now, if I could, dude, I'm glad you actually called in, because most people don't know about that property out there. So if we look at the area, if you get off the highway going out to Crossroads, first thing you see is two big penitentiaries, right?
Mm-hmm.
So not only do you have the folks that work in there, you have the feeder jobs that feed the people that work inside the correctional institutions. The whole economy out there is pretty much based off of warehousing folks. So I believe that the way that we get to a situation where we rectify it again is changing the statutes and the regulations.
Mm-hmm.
So at the beginning of the conversation, you had mentioned that it was a rehabilitation center. Well, that's not true, because again, rehabilitation means to restore to useful nature. So if you look at the lack there of adequate programming, adequate training, etc., is non-existent, because we don't want to actually rehabilitate people, because it's more economic prosperity in keeping the institution alive to be able to warehouse folks.
Mm-hmm.
But again, that goes back to the state policies we have and even the federal policies that we have.
Uh-huh.
Because if we were to truly change corrections to a mantra of rehabilitation, folks, we would see rehabilitation, but that goes to the foundation. I'm trying to crush all this
in.
So if we look at the first reconstruction, we had jails.
Right.
During the first reconstruction. After the first reconstruction, we had correctional institutions. And in these correctional institutions, we also solidified in law the only caveat that you can have indentured servants or the continuation of slavery.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So when we talk about modern day slavery and we look at certain states like Detroit, et cetera, that passed laws for inmates that would never be able to vote again, we see the trajectory of institutionalized correctional facilities and incarceration.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's time that we actually change that mantra to rehabilitating, meaning if we have people in here that are sexual violators, and they should be sent to certain areas where they are dealing with that.
Those issues,
which even goes to this tier situation.
Mm-hmm.
Because in a tier situation, you can have somebody that's caught urinating and somebody that molests a little child, and they will both pop up on that exact same sexual registry. Well, these aren't the same type of sexual deviant individuals. One person urinated in public, the other person is actually going out to little kids.
Right.
That should be isolated and separated and worked on.
Right.
The same when we talk about warehousing folks for nonviolent drug offenses. Mm-hmm. Well, drugs are multiple two to things, right? But scientifically, they say drugs do two things. They deal with you psychologically and they deal with you physically, meaning they deplete your dopamines or they block your dopamines and you right. have a physical connotation. Well, the correctional institutions don't work on those, mm-mm. right? Which means I can't be rehabilitating you if you have a physical and or a psychological dependency on the substance. That needs to be addressed and modified.
Right.
Now, when we're talking about warehousing capital offenses, that's a little different when you talk about somebody that's committing multiple murders or things of this nature, as opposed to somebody that's committing crimes for economic disparity.
Okay.
But we don't address that in the statutes.
Right.
And I believe it's easy to be fixed. And again, I want to highlight that bill again, because if I get that bill passed, let's say that you have an inmate locked up and they're cutting hair. Once they hit 2,500 hours of cutting hair, now they're a certified barber. Right. Or if they're doing anything bondable, now they're bonded. So once that person is released, they no longer have to look for a job, because now I can start a plumbing business, which we don't have East of Truth. Or now I can start
exactly.
X, Y, and Z businesses. Or I got my IT skills and I can start one of these businesses, which would change the economic right. Disparity. Mm-hmm. But all that can be done legislatively, and I believe that's the only way it will happen, because the institutions, by statute, don't right. have the ability to do individual operations.
Right. Mm-hmm. And just real quick before we go to our next caller, that's actually one thing that we spoke with them
yes,
about
we
is
did.
What is going on rehabilitative-wise in the prisons, okay? Because if you have all
lockdown.
These inmates and they're and look, if they're in the facilities and we're not doing anything to rehabilitate them, they have to come back to us in the community. So what exactly are we doing? And they spoke of several programs, okay? And I do want to make this clear. They spoke of several programs that's
like
going
the
on
dog
with DOC.
Petting program.
But listen, but
that doesn't count, though.
Brandon,
you're not
be
coming
nice.
Out being a
but listen,
veterinarian.
But listen,
exactly.
they spoke
for
about
real,
they spoke I'm about sorry. Several programs, but none of those programs, with the exception of Puppies for Parole,
come on,
was
yeah.
at Crossroads. Yeah. I mean,
exactly.
to my understanding.
That's it.
So, you know, come on, y'all.
And again, can I throw this in?
Yeah, go ahead.
In
go ahead.
Committee, they come in and they trout the puppy for whatever it's called.
Yeah.
And I have an issue with it. Because it's one thing to take cute pictures with somebody that committed crimes holding a puppy, but that's PR stuff for DLC.
For DLC.
Right.
That same dude, when he gets out, he ain't getting a job being a veterinarian because he hasn't been trained.
Nope.
So you holding a puppy has little to no relevance of you changing the trajectory of your life. It looks good on promotional stuff, but it has no value. What will have value is actually have a
right.
veterinarian program.
I mean, if you want them to play with animals.
That's what I'm saying.
Right.
Right.
And that was pushed in by the previous director, more than likely, because, you know, you couldn't get nothing in on that previous DLC director. Let's go to our next caller. We have a caller on the line.
Yep, this is Jeff.
Hi, Jeff. How are you doing?
Well, all right. And one of the things I think that would help both the communities and the inmates is prison industries, and not putting the prison or the industry inside the prison, but putting it next to the prison.
Right.
And allowing these prisoners to work alongside role models, people that are out in the community living their life as a regular citizen. It also would give them more of a paycheck than what they're getting. And it would train them for some employment down the road. And, you know, some of this isn't just a matter of giving them training as to specific jobs, but also teaching some of these guys who went in at a very young age what it is to hold a job and how it is to take care of your own finances and everything else.
Right,
so,
right.
That's one of the things that I think could be helpful, is if we used, the folks on the outside and put the folks on the outside and the folks on the inside together so that they could work side by side.
Right, right. Well, thank you, Jeff, for calling in. Brandon, I want to ask you, I want to bring something to your attention that I found out when I went through and was reading a lot of DOC's policies, okay? And we spoke to them about this
yes.
when we were in the meeting, and a couple of the people didn't even know that this was their policy, that when an offender or an inmate, you know, gets about 6 months away from release, they can actually take a a writ. I mean, not a writ. They can take a furlough away from prison to go to a job interview they didn't know that. A lot of stuff that a lot of people don't know about DOC policy is that people think that an inmate cannot go to a loved one's funeral. But that's not so. The policy states the director of DOC can approve an offender to go to. Now, they have to be in a certain classification with their crime, but they can go to a funeral. And many of them, you know, people just don't think that they can do that. You know, they think that's a no. When you have to read that policy, because if you don't know the policy, then how can you confront them with the policy when they're not following it? So, Brandon, did you know about that? Can you?
Now you can leave, but the problem with policy, notice I keep saying policies and statutes. Statutes right. should come first. So the policies are subject to opinions, and they're opinionated.
Right.
Okay. So the policies that are not tied with statutes hold little to no weight. So to answer your question, yes, an inmate can be furloughed out, job requests, et cetera, but that's subject to the approval of that correctional facility, which is subject to my observation of your status while you're locked up in here, not statutorily.
Right.
Right. Not
right.
saying that
right.
6 months, this is a statute unless
right.
you're in the hole.
Right.
So, yes, the other thing, Jeff, that's actually a slippery slope. We had and I'm proud to kill this one. We had a facility that came in about a year or so ago, and they wanted to take inmates and they wanted to build houses inside of the correctional institutions. On face value, it sounds good because now you got people working construction, learning skills, and all this other cool things. The question I had was, one, are they going to have employment with the company upon release? The answer was no. Mm-hmm. Two, are they going to have any type of buy-in from the resale of these properties? Because you're constructing houses, and you're not going to sell these at a discounted price. You're going to sell these at market value. Mm-hmm. Well, the owner of the company looked at me like I was evil and was like, well, no, why would we do that? Because you got these folks working. So I agree that institutionalized workforce could be beneficial because it teaches skills. It's an extremely slippery slope when we look at the statutes and the language, again, going back to the first Reconstruction and the creation of penitentiaries, because we went from city jails, county jails, that's where
right.
we have a sheriff,
right?
Right, militia, and then we went to correctional institutions that solidified slavery by law.
Yeah,
it's called right. the 13th Amendment.
Mm-hmm. Right. So moving forward, because we're getting down to our last little few minutes here, Mr. Ellington, what are your plans moving forward with DOC in this situation at Crossroads? What are your plans? Because I know we have several men from the prison that can hear this program. You know, let them know what your plans are, because I know they're eager to know.
Now, to be 100% honest, so not using the folks in Crossroads, but I'm definitely going to use Crossroads to further the political agenda that I have to deconstruct correctional institutions. So when I look at the inmates that have been locked down and the longevity of their being locked down and the lack there of incentivized activities in that facility, it helps me use legislation to move forward.
Right.
Now with the legislative body, and again, this is not losing dollars, this is redirecting dollars. So we hear from DOC that there's a lack of dollars. Well, I know for a fact it's impossible. I also know for a fact,
because that's what we were told.
Well, no, I do the budget.
Right.
I know for a fact that's impossible. I know for a fact that millions of dollars, taxpayer dollars, and this is no lie, it's going to sound crazy, and it was actually testified in committee by old Director Lombardi, millions of dollars are put in brown plastic bags and taken to Iowa or Omaha to get the drugs to kill folks.
Right.
Oh, the lethal injection.
Thank stuff? You. I couldn't think of the name of the thing. But that's not even on the books though. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So by policy, not statute, by policy, they've been able to take money, put it in the bag, drive across the state lines, bring back cortisone is the drug and use it to kill folks. Former Representative Jerry LaFavor is the one that actually got them to testify to that in committee.
Wow.
Right? So all of this is documented. So to answer your question, I'm going to be working with some of the reps that I've already contacted, some
right.
of them out of St. Louis, bypassing the corrections committee, because I contacted folks from the corrections committee and they was unconcerned about the lockdown, and we're going to try to do some funding issues, redirect some of the money to programs that we think is going to be beneficial,
right?
And then to keep galvanizing the community, because to knock on the door of the penitentiary is futile. To knock on the door of the legislative body can guarantee concrete change. So right. to actually get some of the inmates to actually follow up, and we will be doing a follow-up meeting at the facility with a lot of the folks that have written me. And I'm using Ricky Kidd as one of the point people for various reasons. And again, right, I don't right. hide anything. I use Ricky because I believe Ricky is somebody that's innocent, that should be out of the correctional facilities.
Right.
And by working with him, I know I have somebody that's unhinged with orthodox.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. And actually, just to recap that, Deputy Warden Schreeder did speak with Ricky Kidd at the end of the meeting after you left, and was saying that he wanted to connect with Ricky about some programs.
So, would have had to, because you know. He was supposed to have been brought up, and this is games that they
I'm saying wanted to connect with him about a program.
I know they're going to have to.
Right.
They're going to have to, because they're supposed to have him there at 4:30. They didn't bring him in there until almost 5 when I had to get ready to leave, but that was cool because my whole objective, and I don't hide none of it, my whole objective was to have the warden and the folks that I don't talk to know that I'm going to trust an inmate before I trust you guys.
Right.
This is who I'm working with. So it creates issues and targets, but I also know Ricky is one of those inmates that haven't caused problems.
Right.
So, and we need to do that. We need to be utilizing folks that are locked up,
exactly.
that aren't problems, to actually expose real issues right. that's happening in there.
Because we also had asked specifically for an officer of the NAACP prison chapter, and they didn't cry. We had a member, and but we didn't, you know, we didn't have a actual officer. And I do understand a couple of them were transferred to other facilities, but there was still like a previous president, a previous vice president that was there, and they would have been better to
but
come.
But see, that's
up.
Who you want, though. You don't want to talk to the person that's seen the shooting. You want to talk to the shooter. Like, why'd you shoot?
Right.
Why am I talking to a person that just witnessed it?
Yes.
I'm going to talk to the shooter.
Yes.
Well, I know we had another caller, but unfortunately, I don't think we have time to take that other call. But Mr. Ellington, I want to thank you for coming out today and doing the show with us. Ms. Johnson, I appreciate you, too. Thank you for coming out. Mm-hmm. And prayerfully, your endeavors moving forward, DOC, will be successful. And, you know, they will honor everything they told you in the meeting that day. And Mr. Ellington, I'm sure that you will get down through there at Crossroads and make sure that things are accordingly. So, everyone, thank you very much for tuning in. You all have a blessed day. And thank you for listening.
It's the 420 Drug War News. The following comes to us out of New York City, courtesy Spectrum News.
New York Department of Health released the results of a long-awaited report concerning marijuana legalization. Findings that say the positives far outweigh the negatives. Joining me now from New York City is Chris Alexander. He is policy coordinator with the New York Policy Office of Drug Policy, of the Drug Policy Alliance. Chris, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So what I find very interesting about the report was that it did kind of go deeper than just simply we are going to recommend, you know, the legalization of marijuana for recreational commercial purposes. It kind of goes into, you know, kind of the business side of this.
The state is concerned about a lot of things, but they also did their due diligence, not just looking at the other states who are regulating marijuana currently for adult use, but really taking a deeper dive into what's the certain lessons that have been learned from those states. You know, what are the challenges that they've had, and how do we address those head on here in New York?
So what sort of challenges have we seen in other states? I mean, you know, one issue that I've heard from some state lawmakers is how it was rolled out, say, in Colorado, where there was some concern about just how a commercialized recreational marijuana program there had occurred, and how there was some concern about people who had imbibed and then had gotten behind the wheel of a car. I know a lot of people are watching Massachusetts, what Massachusetts is ultimately going to do here. Just what sort of lessons should New York learn in terms of, were this to be allowed to happen in New York, what New York could do differently?
Absolutely. I think one good example that came up in the report was a good deep look at what happened in Oregon as it relates to tax rates. Oregon was one of those states that set a pretty high tax rate initially for marijuana that was coming to the market. And they realized that, you know, individuals saw that it wasn't cost effective. And so they continued to visit the illicit market to access their marijuana. But when they dropped the tax rate a bit, they saw a lot more people coming into the stores. They saw their revenue jump, but they also saw the illicit market size shrink. And that was one of the key things that kind of thing came up. I think related to public safety, what is evidenced in the report was that the sky hasn't fallen. That roads are no less safe, there's no increase in crime in our communities and in the communities across the state where marijuana is being regulated and legally sold. And so I think that also was a concern, but something after some research the state has concluded is not as harmful as prohibition has been on our communities.
Again, that was Chris Alexander with the Drug Policy Alliance out there on the web at drugpolicy.org. And I am Dean at drugtruth.net.
We hope you enjoyed today's show and that we leave you with something to think about, something to talk to your neighbors about, and a reason to get involved. As always, the opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests of Jaws of Justice Radio, not of KKFI, the Midcoast Radio Project Incorporated, its staff, or volunteers. You can find our calendar of events and a link to our show on the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page. You can always listen to us live and find our podcasts on the KKFI website, kkfi.org. If you have a show idea or want to help produce the show, email us at jawsofjusticeradio@yahoo.com. This is Jamie reminding you our outro music is Better Man from the Playing for Change CD. Please tune in for the rest of our 9 a.m. weekday lineup with Law and Disorder on Tuesday, Alternative Radio on Wednesday, Cowtown Conversations on Thursday, and Between the Lines at 9 a.m., followed by Bioneers at 9:30 a.m. on Fridays. Up next is Monday Morning Medicine Show with Dr. Mike, and at noon, Arts Magazine with Michael Hoag. Stick around for Jazz and Blues in the afternoon and Eco Radio KC at 6 p.m. Then round out your day south of the border with Fiesta Musical, Compartiendo Familia, and Compartiendo en Noche.